not ever going to be violated again in that way at an airport that's supposedly looking out for my welfare.
A state lawmaker takes a stand against TSA screening. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 22nd of February. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaskans rally to support union workers in Wisconsin.
And they're trying to go too far, and we're going, hell no! Hell no!
Hell no!
Hell no!
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. If you are an individual owner of Indian Trust land, an IIM account holder, or heir to an Indian Trust landowner or account holder, you may be eligible to receive money from a $3.4 billion federal settlement. To get a detailed written notice about the settlement that explains your legal rights, you may visit IndianTrust.com or call 1-800-961-6109. This message is sponsored by the Native American Trust.
Governor Sean Parnell says Senate leaders are dragging their feet on oil tax changes he believes would spur future development and jobs. In a news conference this morning, Parnell said he's spoken and written to Senate committee chairmen with no confirmation they plan to take up the legislation. The House Resources Committee has been holding hearings on the oil and gas production tax. With the session approaching the halfway point, Parnell says the Senate should also be hearing the bill. It would provide oil industry incentives and credits beyond those already in state law.
Something of this importance, something of this great significance in terms of creating jobs and speaking to one of our economic drivers here ought to be taking place in both bodies. So I don't want to hear any, we don't have time. I don't want to hear any of those statements about how we don't have time when action is being delayed.
Parnell claims oil companies are leaving the state because of the tax regime. He says the bill would create tens of thousands of new jobs over 30 years. But in testimony last week before the House Resources Committee, representatives from ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips said they could not guarantee greater investment in Alaska if oil taxes change. They said such decisions are based on numerous variables, not just taxes. Under Parnell's proposal, the state could lose up to $2 billion per year in revenue. But the governor says it's important to look out 30 years.
In the short term, how do we fill it? We will use savings in that case and work to live within our means using those savings. That's what the savings are there for, is to be that bridge to a more prosperous future for Alaskans.
Senate President Gary Stevens, a Republican, says many senators are skeptical of Parnell's claims that oil companies would step up investment and exploration if the state were to expand its tax credits.
I think the question that we're all struggling with is if we did not get what we wanted out of oil companies in exploration and development for the $2 to $3 billion of credits we've already extended, how can we be sure that if we give $5 to $10 billion in credits that we'll get additional jobs for Alaskans and exploration and development? So that's a real concern, and we're not getting those answers, I think, from Big Oil at this time.
An oil and gas consultant to the Parnell administration recently told House members that it's difficult to assess the impact of tax changes on the oil and gas industry because the state requires companies to provide little data. He noted the state already gives generous tax credits and other deductions and allows producers to convert tax credits to cash. The governor hasn't decided whether to return federal funds the state received to implement provisions of the federal health care overhaul he deems unconstitutional. But if the federal government asks for the money back, Parnell says he'll be happy to return it. According to a website managed by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the state received about $15 million for programs under the law. A judge in Florida last month struck down the overhaul as unconstitutional. Alaska was a party in the case. Despite conflicting court rulings in other cases, Parnell considers the Florida ruling the law of the land as it pertains to Alaska. State Representative Sharon Cisna is slowly making her way back to Juneau from Seattle. The Anchorage Democrat decided to go by car, small plane, and ferry after Transportation Security Administration officials required her to undergo a pat-down before boarding her plane on Sunday. And she says she won't fly again until the TSA changes its procedures. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Representative Cisna was flagged for a pat-down at a SeaTac security checkpoint Sunday night, but she has a different name for it.
The feel-up, and I'm sorry, that to me is exactly what it was.
At first, Cisna says she was directed to the full-body scanner. She had been through the same procedure at SeaTac 3 months earlier, and so she had an idea of what to expect next.
And what I knew was that as a person who I like to think is a veteran of breast cancer, I was unusual. It pointed out the fact that I only had one breast. And that gave to them the message that I had to have the feel down, that they had to do a very invasive feeling of my body parts to see what exactly I had and didn't have.
Cisna calls that previous pat-down experience horrifying. She says the TSA agent who dealt with her this time around was very nice. The woman asked her repeatedly to go through the pat-down, but Cisna kept giving the same answer.
I said, no, I will not. And she says, do you know what that means? And I said, yes, I do. It means I'm not going to be flying the airplane. I'm not going to be able to stay in this airport.
Instead, Cisna and her husband drove a rental car to Vancouver, took a small plane to Prince Rupert, and hopped on the ferry from there. She will arrive in Juneau on Thursday.
It is a trip back in time, in a way, getting to Alaska the more difficult way. Not 2 hours, but rather it'll be 4 days.
The TSA wouldn't respond to specific questions about the incident, but said in a statement, "We are sensitive to the concerns of passengers who were not satisfied with their screening experience." Cisna says she won't be satisfied until TSA changes the screening experience.
I'm taking, from now on, I'm taking the ground route until we figure this one out. I am not ever going to be violated again in that way at an airport that's supposedly looking out for my welfare.
Cisna says she'll be able to keep flying in Alaska, where there aren't any full-body scanners. She says with budget discussions going on in Juneau, it's a bad week to be away from the legislature, and she's sorry she's not there. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Alaska public employees joined thousands across the country today in rallies to support public workers in Wisconsin. They even learned a song for the occasion.
On Wisconsin, on Wisconsin, grand old Badger State.
Unions in Wisconsin are battling the state's Republican governor and lawmakers who want to do away with the employees' right to collective bargaining. Alaska AFL-CIO President Vince Beltrami led a noon rally across the street from the state capitol building in Juneau. He says a 30-year assault on workers' rights by conservative and corporate interests has finally reached a tipping point.
We're all of a sudden, they're trying to go too far, and we're going, hell no! Hell no!
Hell no!
Hell no! Not in this country. We're not going to take it laying down. This is nothing but a battle of big, wealthy corporate interests against the people.
More than 80 people attended the rally, including members of the three largest state employee unions, the National Education Association of Alaska, and the Juneau Central Labor Council. Gary Boatwright is a Ketchikan High School math teacher and a member of the NEA.
If we didn't have our union, we probably wouldn't have nearly the salary structure we have and our health benefits and stuff like that. But it also allows us to be better teachers because we're comfortable and we can do more for our students, and so it works out for everybody.
Public employees in several other states held rallies today to show solidarity with workers in Wisconsin, including Idaho, Indiana, Minnesota, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, and others. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new music program inspires kids at a Sitka high school.
I've never been in choir, and I've always hated my voice, and I suck in it, and I like it now.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2011 PFD. Paper applications are available at the same 270 statewide locations as last year. More information at alaska.pfd.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
A former Anchorage police officer has been found guilty of sexual assault. The Anchorage Daily News reports that Anthony Rollins also was found guilty today of criminal use of a computer and official misconduct for 5 of 6 alleged victims. Authorities say the assaults occurred while Rollins was on duty as a police officer in 2008 and 2009. The Superior Court jury in Anchorage acquitted the 43-year-old Rollins of second-degree sexual assault as well as official misconduct involving one of the alleged victims. Senator Mark Begich wants Alaskans to propose ideas for trimming the federal budget. The Democrat is asking Alaskans to submit comments to his congressional website, begich.senate.gov.
We know the ideas are out there. So part of the task here will be to reach out to Alaskans to have them tell us some of those ideas that we can then utilize in our debate and our issues around the deficit.
House Republicans and Senate Democrats are in a standoff over whether the federal government will shut down on March 4th. The House passed a continuing resolution that will keep the government running, but it includes deep spending cuts Senate Democrats don't agree with. Begich says some House Republicans are prepared to shut down the government no matter what.
We know we have to cut the budget. No one's disagreeing with that. We have to set the priorities and do it over a period of time that's not overnight. Because if you do it overnight, you're going to have dramatic impact on the economy. But a shutdown is, you know, that's where some of these guys want to go.
Begich favors a 5-year spending freeze on discretionary federal spending, cutting farm subsidies, and selling federal properties the government no longer uses. In Alaska, Fred and Mary Michaels have been protesting against abortion outside the Valley Women's Health Clinic in Palmer almost every Friday for the last 4 years. Now a counter-protester has started driving in from Anchorage to make her voice heard too. APRN's Joshua Tucker has more.
3 people stand in a semicircle on a snowy sidewalk outside the clinic. Together, they recite a rosary condemning abortion. One counter-protester has joined the sidewalk scene. Parked 10 feet away, she plays loud music to make her voice heard.
Give us the grace, when the sacredness of life before birth is attacked, to stand up and proclaim that no one ever has the authority to destroy unborn life.
St. Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle.
Fred and Mary Michaels are holding signs provided by the Catholic organization, the Knights of Columbus.
We're in Palmer, and we're at the office of Dr. Susan Lamaggi. And she performs abortions. And we were trying to pray for that she'll stop.
Last July, founding member of Standing Together Against Rape, or STAR, Lenny Moren, began driving up from Anchorage most Fridays.
I'm counter-protesting their protest. About this is my body, it's my choice.
For Moren, the abortion issue is very personal.
I find it offensive that they should stand outside doctors' offices that are still open and still dealing with patients that may have to make a decision, and they don't need that kind of guilt put on them.
When she was 17, Moren was raped at a party.
Apparently he slipped something in my drink, And I woke up in my car, and I had been raped.
Back then, in 1969, abortion was still illegal in Alaska. So Moren's mother found a pimp who took her to the back room of a daycare center, where another woman laid her on an ironing board and gave her quinine to make her miscarry. But the quinine made Moren dangerously ill, and she began to hemorrhage.
What are they going to put me through next? I just couldn't imagine going through anything worse than what I had just been through. So I got to the hospital, and Dr. Curtis said I was within 15 minutes of dying. He saved my life, and didn't miscarry at that time. It took 2 weeks before I miscarried.
When the state of Alaska voted to legalize some abortions in 1970, 3 years before the Roe v. Wade decision, Moren's story was the last piece of testimony heard by the legislature before they voted. It was read into the record by Dr. Curtis. Over the years, Moren's experiences helped her become an activist on the issue. She was a co-plaintiff in a suit with Dr. Lamaggi, calling on Mat-Su Regional Medical Center to perform abortions since they accept public funds.
She's a wonderful doctor.
She stands for women's rights, and she makes sure that we in this state can have a first and second trimester termination. And she goes to great lengths of danger for that.
Dr. Lamaji does not speak to the press. Her husband, John Fairfield, works with her at the clinic.
I've been here for over 25 years in this office, and yes, over the past 25 years, there have been, from time to time, episodes when I've had to call the police about somebody coming onto private property and trespassing. We're not now speaking of the people who are here today.
Fred and Mary Michaels have expressed their views cordially over the years.
There are other choices besides abortion. Adoption is a wonderful option. And a lot of people choose to raise their child rather than, you know, maybe have some hardships raising it, but still they have a child.
Fred Michaels finishes his tuna sandwich. He protests on his lunch break. After an hour in the cold, everyone packs up and leaves. They say they'll be back next Friday. For APRN, this is Joshua Tucker, reporting from Palmer.
Charges have been dropped against a Healy man accused of keeping two illegal wolf hybrid dogs. Fairbanks Assistant District Attorney Ben Seekins says the case against Terry DelBene was dropped because the Healy resident didn't intend to violate Alaska's law against owning hybrids.
You have to have a mental state and an action state for a crime. And I didn't feel that the defendant had the requisite mental state. I felt that he was not aware that these animals were actually part wolf.
State DNA tests of three dogs DelBene has showed two with wolf blood. Wolf hybrids are considered a threat to public safety and a possible disease source for wild wolves. The state tightened its regulations on wolf hybrids in 2002, and only licensed educational or research facilities can own them.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And SEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, where every year Alaska Natives from all corners of the state graduate and become engineers, scientists, and physicians. Students can get involved as early as middle school, then move to the University of Alaska Anchorage, Fairbanks, or Southeast in a program based on skill building, collaboration, and community. Learn more at ansep.net. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program.
Fairbanks is digging out after a two-day storm that dumped more than a foot and a half of snow. National Weather Service meteorologist Ted Fathauer in Fairbanks says the blizzard was one for the record books.
The snowfall yesterday at Fairbanks Airport was 11.8 inches, and the total snowfall for the event was 18.5 inches. This is the sixth greatest two-day snowfall in Fairbanks on record.
The heavy snowfall gave way to high winds yesterday that caused drifts, closed roads, toppled trees, and obscured visibility. Fathauer says the forecast calls for another round of precipitation and high winds, and that could eventually translate into more snow in the interior.
The weather isn't over yet. The maps are really looking like wintertime maps, not like early spring maps.
Fathauer says big weather events tend not to double up, and he doesn't expect another major snowstorm. The new head of Alaska's Marine Highway System has been flying over and sailing through Alaska waters for years. Captain Mike Neusel commanded large in-state operations for the U.S. Coast Guard, but he also has a personal connection with the ferries. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has the story.
The first time Mike Neusel got on the ferry, he was transferring north after being stationed in Astoria, Oregon. It was a long enough time ago that the system's southern terminus was in Seattle, not Bellingham, Washington.
Took vehicles on there, whole family, and actually took our dog with us up there, so an enjoyable first trip, and every time I moved either into or out of the state of Alaska, or actually within the state of Alaska, we used the ferry system, and I thoroughly enjoyed every single trip.
Neusel's 30-year journey through the Coast Guard ranks took him to Sitka, Kodiak, and Juneau, as well as Hawaii and Florida. The Juneau resident retired from the service last year and enrolled in the University of Alaska's Masters of Arts in Teaching program. He student-taught at the middle school level and says he enjoyed the work, but he decided full-time teaching was not what he wanted to do. So when Transportation Commissioner Mark Lucan approached him about the job, he decided to apply. Neusel, currently visiting Florida, doesn't start as deputy commissioner for marine operations until March, so he's not ready to talk too many specifics yet, but not surprisingly, he shares the goals of his new boss.
Undoubtedly, safety and reliability is utmost. We need to have a safe and efficient transportation system that services the community of Southeast Alaska, and that's my primary goal, is to make sure that that will continue.
He takes over the job from Jim Beadle, a hands-on manager who recently retired after 37 years with the ferries. Day-to-day operations continue to be run by General Manager John Falvey, who is based at Ketchikan headquarters. That leaves Neusel, who will stay in Juneau, with political duties. He says he's worked with citizens' organizations, such as advisory groups in Prince William Sound and Cook Inlet, and appreciates their value. And he says appealing to administration higher-ups in the legislature is not a foreign routine.
My last and final tour in Alaska was as the chief of staff for the 17th District, you know, number two to the admiral, but oversaw the entire district and its operations, and very familiar with making the needs of the service known in an appropriate manner, fact-based, and I hate to use the word lobbying, but lobbying for what we needed in order to maintain our efficiencies in service.
The new ferry system chief says he knows the fleet is aging and some ships need to be replaced or undergo major repairs. Neusel, who holds two engineering degrees, supports the effort to build Alaska-class ferries designed for shorter routes.
The ferry system serves Southeast Alaska communities that are not, you know, days apart, but hours apart sailing, and not having cabins and making it functional for those communities, I think is a good thing, because that's the communities that they serve.
He also wants to find a way to keep the fleet's two fast ferries sailing. They're facing engine problems that could ultimately sideline the vessels or require costly repairs. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Mount Edgecombe High School has its first full-time music teacher in 25 years. Stephen Courtright has been at the state-run boarding school since the beginning of the year, and with Courtright's hiring comes the rebirth of a music program that has come and gone in recent history. It's a program the new teacher and school administration hopes will grow into the future. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
Let's start at the very beginning.
A very good place to start. When you read, you begin with
A, B, C.
When you sing, you begin with Do, Re, Mi.
Do, Re, Mi. The first three notes in the solfège scale.
Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti.
Solfège might have become famous when Maria used it to teach the Von Trapp children how to sing in The Sound of Music. But in real life, it's been used for centuries to teach singers how to find their pitch, whether they're on a hillside in Austria or in a classroom in Sitka.
Solfège is actually a way I learn. It's kind of weird, I guess, but it helps me get the song down easier than singing it normally.
Anna Springer, a freshman from Bethel, is writing the solfège symbols on a whiteboard during choir class at Mount Edgecombe High School, a state-run boarding school in Sitka.
I was actually put in this class last semester, and I've never been in choir, and I've always hated my voice. And so I decided to just stick with it, because I didn't want to go through the hassle of changing my class. And I stuck in it, and I like it now.
That's probably music to the ears of Stephen Courtright, who this year joined the faculty as the first full-time music teacher at Edgecombe in 25 years.
When I first arrived on campus, I heard from everybody how excited they were, how necessary it was, how much music had been missed, and how great it was to have music going again. And that support hasn't waned or flagged since, and it's really just very positive to get that feedback and to know that that's the environment that we're in.
Courtright has about 31 students, including five in his first class of the day, rock band. Courtright has, at the moment anyway, a small program. but the program itself has a big legacy.
Historically, this program was huge. Back when the BIA had the school, there were choirs that were considered some of the best in Alaska. The band topped 90 at one point, from what I understand.
He says he's not sure it will ever get back to 90 students, but he'd like to see it grow to about 50 or 60 students in 2 years. So would Bernie Gourlay, academic principal at Edgecombe.
And I will probably at some point cringe at what I say now, but one of the tough things is that when you have a program that's so successful that you build your whole schedule around it, that's a goal. What I mean by that is if it's so popular that so many kids want to take it that we have to build the rest of the schedule around it, that's saying that it's doing what we wanted it to do.
Back in the classroom, junior Sean Olis is packing up his guitar at the end of the rock band class.
No, I've never taken a music class. I've learned just about everything on my own, but I've been playing guitar since I was 6 years old, just not as serious as when I got here.
What do you think of the class?
It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Cordwright says he's working with students from a variety of experience and skill levels. Some were in music classes back in their hometowns, and others, like Olis, never had a formal music class until they arrived at Edgecombe.
Working on this staff is pretty awesome, and working with these kids is pretty awesome. I've never worked with a population of students who had so much raw talent and enthusiasm for being involved in music. And it's just a matter of giving them the tools necessary to put it all in action.
The tools include instruments the school has invested in, trumpets and trombones and clarinets and guitars, just to name a few, but also time, which in hiring Cordwright is something else the school has invested in. This choir might not be the biggest, and this band right now might not be the loudest, but give them time and just watch what happens. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rosemarie Alexander, Casey Kelly, and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Joshua Tucker in Anchorage, Dan Ross in Fairbanks, and Ed Ronco in Sitka. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Ron Zastro, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com. And by Alaska Communication Systems, converging voice, video, internet, and data applications for business. ACS connects companies from the North Slope to Ketchikan to each other and the rest of the world. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.